Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning, Martinez Buendia versus Holder. And we have Mr. Roth before us. Good morning, Mr. Roth.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Charles Roth for the petitioner. Doris Martinez Buendia is a 50-year-old optometrist from Colombia. She fled her country due to persecution that arose because of her involvement organizing health brigades. Health brigades are a well-known form of charitable activity in Colombia. Medical professionals go into underserved areas and help the poor and displaced.
Is this a group sort of like Doctors Without Borders, or is it just this collection of these individuals who happen to get together?
The health brigades is a generic term that refers to various different groups of people. This, her health brigades was a fairly was organized by herself. So it was it lasted.
Her group,
it was her group, although it wasn't just a one time. I mean, it was a period. It occurred over a period of years and had repeated. So it wasn't like a one shot deal. It had continuity.
But it was the same group of people that did this.
There was a core group of people that continually went, and then some friends, you know, other doctors that they would convince to go along sometimes.
And okay.
So she and her sister were the ringleaders, if you will. Her brother-in-law was the driver usually.
Mr. Roth, how much of that is actually developed in the record here? That's what I've been struggling with. We've got the Resource Information Center printout on these health brigades as part of the record. But for example, the role of the sister as a leader, there's not much there, is there?
Well, it's the testimony and the affidavit and the asylum application. An asylum hearing tends to be less well developed than a trial in district court. There's no doubt that the judge has to get through it within a certain amount of time, and
you expect the immigration judge to be familiar with available information about the situation in the country in question.
Well, it's certainly, I mean, some, I think it was said that immigration court is like a death penalty trial with traffic court resources. The judge has to get through a whole bunch of cases very quickly, and yet we expect the judge.
I'm not arguing with you, but is it reasonable to expect the IJ, for example, to be familiar with that Resource Information Center brief on health brigades and with the country profile that you on human rights that you had in there?
Well, one is required to turn in all these background documentation mm-hmm. to the court a period of time in advance of the trial, the idea being that the judge will have a chance to read through the record. And I think most immigration judges develop an expertise and they focus in on the important documents. And so I guess in this case, given that it was a health brigade, I think it would have been reasonable to expect the judge to read tab mm-hmm. M pretty carefully. In our view, that's true. Now, the board's decision is a little more separated from the facts of the case, and so I don't want to leave out the legal issues here. I would note, just before I get into that, that it's uncontested that she's credible. It's uncontested that what she suffered rose to the level of past persecution. And it's uncontested that the government of Colombia will be unable to protect her from the FARC anywhere in Colombia. The question is basically whether it's on account of one of the five protected groups, i.e. political opinion or particular social group. We think the board's opinion includes several logical gaps and sort of lapses, which are then in and of themselves sufficient to require remand. I want to address one particular thread that seems to me to encapsulate one flaw in the government's approach. The government says even if she had to make pro-FARC political statements with which she disagreed on pain of death, that she was free to disagree on the inside. She could have whatever beliefs she wished so long as she did what they wanted. That is such a cramped view of political freedom. It just can't be right.
What you're saying, I guess, is that I'm looking at page 17. You said the record demonstrates that Ms. Martinez Buendia held an anti-FARC, pro-democracy political opinion and refused to comply with the Parks demands because of those beliefs. Now, I was trying to summarize that as I put this own question. Did her objection and flight indicate her refusal to allow FERC to use her service to others as a method of advancing their political agenda?
Well,
I'm trying to formulate this in something that in more, not so much the social, but the political terms, that she rejected and resisted, and, you know, point of a gun and a lot of other things, that if she were to even allow them to use her, even though it didn't matter what she believed, as long as she continued to help others and they took credit for it, that was their method of advancing their political beliefs by trying to get the populace to be favorable toward them.
I
guess that's a political agenda. That's what I'm trying to figure out here. I want to hear what the government says on that.
The board says, in effect, the FARC was acting out of its self-interest to promote its own political agenda. But that, and that somehow means that they weren't persecuting her for her political beliefs. And we just think that's a non sequitur.
See, if you take this in the context of getting kidnapped, having a gun pointed to her head, these constant threats, her sister being kidnapped and tortured, basically, and her brother-in-law dying, and her fleeing the country and then asking for asylum. It seems that the problem is that it was, for some reason, wasn't a political effort. And I'm trying to see if that can be framed politically or whether it won't help her.
The case law requires that there be some direct or circumstantial evidence which would give rise to an inference that she was persecuted on account of her political views. In this case, her views were against the FARC. Now, she could have, jumped up and down and said, you know, I hate the FARC. That she would never have made it to this country. We don't require someone to commit suicide to qualify for asylum. But her refusal to give in to this request that she endorsed them politically seems to us to pretty clearly convey the message to the FARC that she disagreed with their politics. I don't know if that's responsive to Your Honor's question.
I'm just trying to trace that through because it seems that might be the one issue there. I don't know about the social group. Apparently this is a unique group, and not identified beyond that. But as far as the political, persecution because of her political views, so to speak, that's, I think, that's your burden there, isn't it? Is that what you have to show?
It's our burden. To the extent that you find that there are logical gaps in the analysis, this court generally would remand to the board to allow it to readdress the issues in the first instance. So it may be, and we think, in fact, that you don't need to directly resolve whether the evidence compels the conclusion that the persecution was on account of political opinion. If you find that they made these logical missteps, then you should send it back to the board and have them relook at this. The oddity here is that, I mean, it seems pretty clear that a person who's in this situation is persecuted on account of political opinion, yet some interpretations of Elias Zacharias, as argued by the government, say that she could have whatever belief she wanted, but if the FARC was out to promote its agenda, then its coercion of her, its, you know, killing of her, if it came to that, wouldn't be on account of her political opinion, but rather on account of their self-interest. And we think that they've pushed that too far.
There's nothing that's immutable with her that she's being separated from. Is that the government's position, at least?
Well, in terms of the social group, the board's social group analysis has sort of two prongs.
Okay, I don't want to mix them up, so maybe I better quit interrupting.
Well, I appreciate the questions.
Mr. Roth, can I ask you about on the political opinion? If I understand your position correctly, sort of one prong of this is that doing humanitarian work in Colombia independently of the FARC is inherently a political act.
It's certainly perceived by them as political.
That it's perceived by the FARC as a political statement and act contrary to FARC, and you there have the imputed political opinion prong. Is that right?
Right. As a Marxist group, it's part of their ideology.
Okay. And then you've also got here the I don't want to call it bits and pieces, but call it a mosaic of circumstantial and direct evidence indicating that, in fact, that was explicit. The statements made at the time of the kidnapping, the painting on the car, et cetera, indicating that that band of armed men clearly was attributing a set of political opinions to the plaintiff and her colleagues.
And yes, and I think a mosaic is the perfect word for it. It fits well with the background country information, what we know about the FARC, what we know about how they what they think about the situation in Colombia. And what we need to do is present enough direct and circumstantial evidence to raise the inference that it was on account of her political views.
Let me go back to a point you made a minute ago. Is if we're looking at this case, I mean, one way to go is to say, well, you meet the standard of saying that that the evidence requires a finding in her favor on that issue. And the second would be to say, as you're suggesting, well, find gaps in the board's analysis, remand it for a closer look. Could you identify those gaps? We've been taking you off your outline, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
The board says the FARC wasn't persecuting her on account of political opinion. Rather, it was out to promote its own political self-opinion. That's a non sequitur. Every political group wants to promote itself. The question is whether they think they're helping themselves by persecuting someone. And so the board's published case law includes this mixed motives theory that acknowledges, as a general rule, that the fact that a group would be out to help itself wouldn't preclude the fact that they're out to persecute someone. So as a general rule, they left out their mixed motives analysis. As a specific question, the fact, even if we assume that they initially targeted her for reasons that aren't, that they didn't know what her political views were when they first reached out to her, by the time she resists them over the course of a year, despite the kidnapping of her sister, at some point, any reasonable persecutor would understand that to represent a political opposition to them. Now, I don't say that about every act. If the persecutor is seeking money, well, that's fungible. I might support a political candidate and not want to give money because my wife and mortgage. So money's different. Supplies are different. But when they're asking for a political statement and endorsement, it would be like if someone asked me to endorse Obama or Clinton or whatever in the Tribune. No money, just sign your name. If I say no, and if I say no, knowing that I'm going to be threatened with death, facing kidnapping, all these other, I mean, a person doesn't do that lightly. And there's a natural inference that can be drawn there. And so we think they left out that. I mean, Delgado from the Second Circuit is on point here. The initial targeting is logically distinct from the question of targeting on account of the resistance to the FARC. And so both of those two are real logical gaps. The board also says there's no evidence to support the political, the fact that she was targeted on political grounds, and we think there pretty clearly is evidence, direct and circumstantial evidence. So I think those three, I mean, if you were inclined to remand it to give them a closer look, that's what I would point the court to. Turning to the particular social group, the board made several mistakes. First, the board said that it wasn't a cognizable social group, and second, that she couldn't prove that she was persecuted on account of her membership in the health brigades. In terms of the cognizability, I mean, the first question is whether something is so fundamental to conscience or identity that it shouldn't have to be changed. Some social groups can be something that you just physically can't change, like your ethnicity or your heritage. But other things you can change, but we don't expect you to change them. And the board sets out the general rule, whether it's fundamental to conscience or identity. But then their analysis only asks about identity. It doesn't ask about conscience. Now, we're not trying to make a technical point here. Service to the poor is something that's traditionally been associated with ethical, religious impulses. And so the fact that she's persecuted on account of, I mean, conscience is, it needs to be part of that analysis. This court and other courts have held that where a person is willing to suffer this kind of persecution on account of their membership in a group, that's strong evidence that it's fundamental to their conscience or identity. You held that in Yadigar Sardis and Ahmed. And finally, we think Benitez Ramos was on point here. The fact that the FARC perceives the health brigades as an opponent is something that the board ought to have factored in considering whether health brigades membership is a cognizable social group.
I save a little time for rebuttal.
I do, Your Honor.
I don't want to cut you off. It's your time, but just wanted to remind you.
Thank you, Your Honor. We've made our nexus points. The board's analysis was a one-sentence ipsedixit followed by a string citation that wasn't even accurate. We think it includes a lot of the same mistakes that they made in their political persecution analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you. Mr. Perry, Petty.
Good morning, Your Honors. Aaron Petty on behalf of the Attorney General. The court should deny the petition for review in this case because the harm that the petitioner alleges she suffered was not on account of her political opinion, nor was it on account of her membership in a legally cognizable social group. First, with regard to political opinion, the petitioner has to show that the evidence compels a reasonable fact finder to conclude that the FARC targeted her on account of her political opinion. And first, I think it's important to recognize that we're dealing here with review of the board's decision, and it's important to consider what exactly the petitioner put before the board. And with regard to political opinion, the only argument that the alien made was an imputed opinion based solely on her refusal to do the FARC's bidding. There was no mention of a mixed motives theory. There was no mention of any other basis for a political targeting other than her simple refusal. And that simple refusal to be persecution is foreclosed by Elias Zacharias, by matter of EAG, and matter of SEG.
Mr. Petty, what is simple about that refusal over the course of a year and with the kidnappings, the murder of death of the brother-in-law, the repeated threats that were made?
Well, there were repeated threats, and she did refuse a number of times. And I don't mean to treat it lightly, but there needs to be more than just a refusal under the Supreme Court's precedent in Elias Zacharias and under the board's precedent in EAG and SEG.
Well, in this case, for example, we've got in the record evidence from the board's own resources indicating that the FARC and other armed groups in Colombia perceive these health brigade workers, and here we have a leader of one of those, that they are perceived by the guerrilla groups as political opponents.
Well,
and then here we have the intimidation and the threats. Why isn't it a reasonable inference to say, well, yeah, we impute that there was an imputed political motive here?
Well, I think if you look at those documents, Your Honor, you'll see that many of the health brigades are, in fact, attached to political parties. And in this
case, I'm familiar with that.
And so then there's good reason for the FARC to attribute political motives to many of the health brigades because they are political in nature. This health brigade was not political in nature.
But those same documents with which I am familiar make the point clear that FARC and other guerrilla groups treat all these groups, regardless of how politically organized they may be, regardless of whether they're actually affiliated with a political party, as political opponents.
That was not how I read that part of the
record. Any of the armed groups would perceive them as a threat to their control of a given neighborhood, town, or region, and therefore could target them. You cannot do humanitarian work without being perceived as a political threat by one or all of the armed groups. That's from the record at 387. Mm-hmm. From the INS Resource Information Service.
Even if that's the case, the FARC still has to, for it to be persecution, seek to overcome or punish that political opinion. And here, the FARC's intent, it appears, was not to punish her. They didn't want to stop her. They, in fact, wanted her to keep going.
Well, they wanted to punish her for not cooperating, which they did. This is the problem. I guess I would ask, what should she have said? or what should she have done that, given the undisputed facts and her credibility of all that happened to her sister, to her brother-in-law, over this long period of time, how would she have to reframe what happened to her, which was pretty bad, and so that it would be an acceptable either social group, in my opinion, a political decision on her part. She did not want to help advance their cause and kept resisting. Some would call it courage of her conviction. She was encouraged to refuse, which didn't help her a bit.
And if she had communicated that to the FARC, then that would be substantially more evidence in her favor. But there's no evidence.
What did FARC think she was refusing for? How would they perceive her refusal?
That's not clear from the record. And I believe Elias Zacharias, the Supreme Court, talks about a number of reasons why one, and it might not have been Elias Zacharias, it might have been one of the board decisions, but there is authority that talks about the difference between refusal to join a gang because you disagree with the gang's politics and refusal to join for a host of other reasons. For example,
like you're just scared to death.
Exactly.
Well, that isn't good enough.
So she didn't. That isn't good enough under the law.
On that score, Mr. Petty, let me ask you about a point that's made in the government's brief here. I don't see your name on the brief, so maybe you don't want to maybe you don't want to plead guilty on this one. But on page 25, in the middle of the page there, the government writes, asked repeatedly by her own counsel during the hearing why she would not do what the FARC asked her to do, to give them credit for her humanitarian work with the poor, Martinez stated only that she was a woman of peace and that she believed that the FARC had harmed Colombia by being a rebel group to democracy. So part of my question is, what is the word only doing in that sentence? Why isn't the fact that she described herself as a woman of peace, that she believed the FARC had harmed Colombia, why isn't that pretty clear that she was acting here on her own political motives?
It's possible that she was acting on her own political motives.
If she had said to FARC, no, I think you're terrible people, you've ruined democracy, if she'd made this explanation to the FARC, would that be enough?
Yes, Your Honor.
But if she just says no, then that's not evidence enough.
Well, there's not even evidence that she said no with regard to the telephone
calls. Well, we know
she
refused.
We know she, with regard to the telephone calls, she testified that she just hung up the phone and didn't say anything to them.
If she'd said no, then the case would come out differently?
I don't think if she'd said no, it would have come out differently. If she had explained that she objected to their politics, then it would.
So she has to explain her political motives to these men with guns to claim asylum.
With regard to the nexus issue, the nexus is really a motive requirement that applies to the persecutor. So what we have to look at is the FARC's reason for going after her, not her reason for saying no. And if the FARC doesn't know that she's going to refuse, or if they don't know that a refusal is on account of her political opinion, then there's no nexus to political opinion. With regard to the particular social
group, you kind of have to wave the red cape at the bull. Is that the idea here?
No, Your Honor. It's a question. The nexus issue is a question of motive of the persecutor, and that was made very clear in Elias Zacharias. With regard to the social group issue, there's no group here. A moment ago,
Eddie, in Elias Zacharias, was there any direct testimony similar to what you're suggesting is required here?
I don't know, Your Honor.
I'm not sure that there is.
With regard to the social group issue, there's nothing fundamental or immutable that binds the members of the group together. The board said there's no common quality binding them together. With regard to the distinction that the petitioner wants to make between conscience and identity, that issue was not presented to the board. The reason the board kind of put them together and treated it as one inquiry is because that's how it was presented to them. So that issue, I don't think, has been exhausted. And even if it has been exhausted, I think the board did apply the conscience prong. If you look at the standard at the bottom of page 4 of the record, the board made note that conscience was part of the standard. If the court disagrees on both of those points, it may be necessary to remand to the board for further clarification of what the standard is. But if the court doesn't remand on that issue, I think under Acosta, the board got it right here. The logic of Acosta, in Acosta, the board applied an es judem generis analysis. It was looking at the five characteristics that one can that can make one qualify for asylum. And in order to decide what a particular social group meant, it looked at the other issues. It looked at race, religion, nationality, and political opinion, and said a particular social group has to be like these other things that are either immutable or that are so fundamental that one shouldn't have to change them before being allowed to resettle here. So all fundamental means is it sufficiently like these other categories that it should be treated the same? This court said in Gatimi something that one should not be required to change before being allowed to resettle here. So there's no basis under the logic of Acosta to distinguish one kind of fundamental characteristic from another. The word identity and conscience is just explanatory, but it could just as well be something else, because the real question is how important is it? Does it rise to the level of something that's immutable or something that's so basic that one shouldn't have to change it? Would
you agree that a secular ethical commitment to serve the underprivileged could qualify?
It might, and that's the other issue that might require remand, because the board hasn't had a chance to determine what the test is. In that regard, we don't know if it's an objective test, if it's subjective and fundamental can change with each individual alien. That was suggested by the court, I think, in Ahmed, that it may be subjective. But I think under any test, even under a completely subjective test, which would be the most favorable to the petitioner, I think the petitioner still loses here. We know that Ms. Martinez testified that she continued to participate in the health brigades after she started being threatened, not because participating was especially important to her, but because she trusted in God that she and her sister would be safe. We know that she started organizing the current incarnation of the health brigades in 2000 when she was 40 years old. So this wasn't something she was doing as an impressionable child. And it lasted only until 2004. And there's no evidence that she is continuing any sort of similar work in the United States.
So well, that's not doing the same thing in the United States. She's not in Colombia where the need is, and then once she understands. I guess the problem I have is basically what the government's position is, as long as she, even if she were working under the threat or whatever of the FARC, even in their presence, as long as she helped the same people and that group was doing the same thing, there was no change. She's still going forward doing the same thing she did. She didn't have to change anything other than pretend she's working for the FARC or helping the FARC as opposed to just helping the people. That seems to be the government's position. Whereas she's saying her resistance to going under the umbrella of whatever the FARC in order to give so they can take credit for her good works, hers and the other, that because she's refusing to do that, she won't identify with them and has the courage not to, that's not enough to put her, I keep putting it in political situation, because the social group, you see, is just her and her group. I just don't, I can't understand the analogy. You said for two reasons that it might be worth sending back to remand for clarification. One, the clarification, I guess, for the standard of her social group, and what's the other? The clarification for what it would take to have her properly identify with either a social group or a political group?
Well, they both have to do with social group. And it may be advisable to send it back for clarification, but the court, depending on how the court resolves antecedent issues, it may not be necessary to remand. The two issues are with regard to the test, identity or conscience. If the court disagrees on with the government's position on exhaustion with regard to that issue, and with the government's interpretation of whether the board actually applied the fundamental prong, then it might be necessary to remand for the board to decide what the test should be. And that was what I was trying to explain by analogizing to Acosta.
But you don't think we ought to go there?
I think it depends on how the court resolves the antecedent issues. The second issue is whether, and this is something the board might take up at the same time, whether the fundamentality depends on the test. And I just... sorry, Your Honor. If the question is whether the test is subjective or objective or something else.
Mr. Petty, could I just ask you one more question? Sure. In the government's brief, you all urged us to give Chevron deference to the board's view, but I wasn't sure about exactly what it is that we're supposed to defer.
Well, certainly the board's published decisions are entitled to Chevron deference, I believe, under Neguse.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that there at least used to be a rule that unpublished decisions were granted Chevron deference in this circuit as well, but I'm not sure about that.
Does it make a difference whether it's one board member or more?
It may. I'm not sure what...
I'm still learning this material, so... okay, thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Petty. Mr. Roth, your time had expired, but you may have an additional minute. I believe that's right. Is it? Yeah, your time had expired. That's why I gave you that caution.
We're asking you a lot of questions.
But this is going to be a generous panel on time.
Better start. the government cites no authority for the rule that a person has to wave the red towel in front of the bull. That's not the law, as far as I'm aware, in this or any other circuit. You don't have to invite certain death by intentionally ticking off your persecutor in order to qualify for political asylum. We did exhaust the conscience point. That's at page 29 in our BIA brief. As to the Chevron issue, the Chevron, at least under the Supreme Court's decision in Meade, turns on whether the board is making a rule of law akin to a regulation. A published board decision binds the agency, an unpublished decision doesn't. We do want to, in this case, there's no doubt, she was targeted. They tracked her from one side of Colombia to the other. They pull over this convoy of vehicles. They have a list of the members of the health brigade. As they run away when the government helicopters are circling overhead, somebody says, I've got doors.
Yeah, now, Ms. Roth, does that buttress your political persecution point, or as well as that's an identifiable group, or would you acknowledge that perhaps that's stronger on the political persecution group than on the social group?
Well, the singling out is something that this court and other courts have focused on as something that helps evidence whether someone is being persecuted, whether they're being targeted for persecution. We think it's relevant to both the particular social group and the political persecution point. And if I might...
You may conclude with it.
It seems to us that the clarity of the request here, which was to make a political statement in favor of the FARC, is, in the end of the day, should be one of the prime factors. That's direct evidence. Her refusal to do that leads directly to the inference that she was being persecuted on account of political opinion.
All right. I think. Thank you, Mr. Ross. Thanks to all counsel. The case will be...